It's time to warm up our thoughts and our bodies by thinking about and talking about food. It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning here on Robin Hood Radio. We rebroadcast it on a Saturday during the weekend and also after our new news during the week. And we say a nice good Monday morning to Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning and happy Hanukkah.
That's right.
It starts on Thursday.
Wow.
So how soon it comes, you know? I can't believe it, you know. Christmas will be here, what, 3 weeks? Not even. So it overlaps with Christmas, usually, Hanukkah. It's an 8-day holiday. So even though it starts on Thursday, which is the what, the 9th, the 10th, it'll go almost up to Christmas this year. And, you know, these are both, Christmas and Hanukkah, festivals of light. Think about it. The shortest day, and also Diwali, the Indian holiday at the same time. I'm sure there are other holidays around this time of the year that have to do with light because it is so dark. by the way, according to my niece, who went shopping for a Christmas tree with her daughters, the little nieces, there's a Christmas tree shortage. Is there a Christmas tree shortage in Connecticut?
Not around here because we have Housatonic, which brings in so many beautiful Christmas trees that the FFA program sells. So and we have.
Well, there used to be several Christmas tree farms around Cornwall and Kent.
And there's still, and they're Cornwall, Kent, over in Dutchess County in New York. Yeah, we still have plenty of Christmas
anyway,
trees.
Anyway, well, around Philadelphia, apparently, there is a Christmas tree shortage. And I did hear something on the news this morning about how the demand for Christmas trees is the most ever. Because, as my nephew said, what else is there to do but decorate a Christmas tree? I mean, you can't leave the house. So, anyway, for me, Hanukkah, even though a lot of foods are not really associated with Hanukkah, most American Jews and Americans in general know about Hanukkah is you eat potato pancakes, fried pancakes. But there are foods for Hanukkah, and it is a holiday dear to me, food-wise, because it was my grandmother's big open house party of the year was over Hanukkah. And she would serve... the two main events were the potato pancakes. By the way, the reason we eat fried potato pancakes on Hanukkah is because fried food is symbolic of the meaning of the holiday. The meaning of the holiday dates back to, don't ask me, B.C. The Maccabees fought off the Assyrian Greeks, reclaimed their temple. There was only one day's worth of holy oil to light the eternal lamp that, by the way, is in every Catholic church as well nowadays, since Christianity. In any case, they get that from the Jews. So there was only enough oil for one night, but the miracle was it lasted 8 nights until, or I should say 8 days and nights, until they could get more of the sanctified oil. So oil is the main thing for Hanukkah. And I remember, a long time ago, 25 years ago at least, one of the Hasidic communities, the ones that are the Lubavitch, who were headquartered here in Brooklyn, Chabad, their mission is to get other Jews to be more observant. And they at one time had a storefront on Fifth Avenue, like down the block from Saks, believe it or not, where they demonstrated olive oil pressing, because this is also the time of the year that olive oil is being pressed around the Mediterranean. So it all overlaps. It's all not just religion, it's also culture. So the fried stuff is, as I said, latkes. Is what we say in Yiddish for a potato pancake. Actually, it just means pancake. There are other kinds of latkes. I for Passover, make matzah meal latkes, which are much easier to make than potato pancakes. But there are other foods. Like, we learned sometime, I guess, in the 50s, the 1950s, when I was a boy, that jelly donuts were the Israeli fried food of a preference. And who doesn't like a jelly donut? So, but Israel is only as old as I am. And it took a decade or two before it caught on that, oh, in Israel, they're eating jelly donuts, which is, of course, a Sephardic, meaning originally from Spain, fried food. Let's not forget the Spanish have churros, another fried dough. In the south of Italy, there's a fried dough called chiacchieri, which means chatters, because it's usually served in the afternoon when everybody gathers for a coffee and they have a little fried dough sprinkled with confectioner's sugar. However, in Rome, the big deal, and in Tuscany, the big deal Hanukkah dish is fried chicken. And I happen to be craving fried chicken now because flour is a no-no on the keto diet. 6 grams, I just happen to know this now, 6 grams of carbohydrate per tablespoon of flour, which is okay if you want to thicken something and you're not going to use very much flour, but if you're breading chicken, it's a lot of flour. I have to decide about that. The way a Roman or a Florentine, and by the way, in Florence there is a large Jewish community. In Rome there's a large Jewish community. The way they would make fried chicken is, first of all, my friend Cecilia makes fried chicken this way, but she uses filet pieces, meaning thighs, boneless, skinless thighs, boneless breasts, and you marinate the chicken in lemon juice and olive oil, and Cecilia uses rosemary, but I think more and garlic. But a more typical Roman version would add a pinch of cinnamon and a pinch of nutmeg, or even more than a pinch of cinnamon and a pinch of nutmeg, depends on your taste, and marinate the chicken for a couple of hours, and then dip it in egg and flour and fry it. And you got to fry it in a significant amount of oil, but of course Hanukkah is about a significant amount of oil. My grandmother, who made her big party, as I said, for Hanukkah, served potato pancakes, and I'll get to my job in this, because we were talking about, I don't know, at least 40 or 50 people came through in an afternoon. And my grandmother would serve a continuous flow of potato pancakes from the kitchen, freshly fried. In fact, it was even hard to keep up with everybody. And a dish that she called muchana. I love muchana. I always wanted, when I became a food writer, my grandmother was still alive, and she was actually quite young. I always bugged her, like, where did this dish come from? And she would say something like, "Well, if you lived on the north side of Minsk, on the left side of the street, you know about this recipe." Well, in fact, she was from Brooklyn. Her parents were not from Minsk at all; they were from a shtetl somewhere outside Minsk. As was my grandfather, her husband. I know his shtetl. His shtetl was Dokshitsky, and there was, in fact, a Jews from Dokshitsky website. Facebook group, if you care to look for that, Dokshitsky. I only know this in the last 5 years from somebody, a cousin, I found through Ancestry.com. And the cousin said, "I had an older sister, a half-sister," she said, "who always said we came from dog shit." And I was always curious about this, so now that I'm into genealogy, I discovered that there is, in fact, a shtetl, a little village, a little agricultural hamlet called Dokshitsk, or Dokshitsky, and not dog shit. And that's where we come from. Anyway, so muchana, according to my grandmother, was made only for Hanukkah. and it was big cubes of beef. Now, I have a recipe for the Machana that I've used over the years. I haven't made it in a long time, but I'm going to do it this year. Large cubes of beef. Now, I'm going to use chuck this time, but my old recipe calls for brisket. I don't know what my grandmother used. Chances are she used kosher meat, even though she wasn't kosher. And I'm going to ask my kosher neighbor downstairs what she would use. Well, she's not much of a cook, but what she would use, the name. There are different names in the kosher market for different parts of the chuck. So, because it's shoulder. You're allowed to eat shoulder. You're not allowed to eat rump, but you can eat shoulder. So, for kosher. Anyway, it was this meat, browned very well in oil, and then stewed with just water was the only liquid. A lot of bay leaves. My recipe calls for 3 pounds of meat, 4 large bay leaves, a hot pepper, just the whole hot pepper you can throw in there. I have these small Calabrian peppers I'm going to use. And a couple of cloves of garlic. I think when the recipe originally said chop up the garlic, but what I do these days, and it gives it a wonderful garlic flavor and plenty, is I smashed even the unpeeled garlic. I sort of smashed with the heel of my hand to not only crack it, but also to remove the peel. And I throw that in the pot, couple, 3 cloves of garlic. And you let that cook at very low heat in the oven until it is fork tender, and you have a really good gravy. So don't put in more water than you need to just cover the meat. And like a lot of dishes in the Yiddish repertoire, it tastes better the next day reheated. So it's a good thing to make ahead. And everybody got one chunk of meat. It was not about the meat. It was about the gravy. Oh, by the way, at the end, my grandmother would thicken the gravy with flour and water. And in this case, I would use, even though I'm on a flourless diet, I could make a pretty good gravy with just a couple of tablespoons of flour, stirred into cold water, let's say a quarter of a cup of cold water, or if you have the cold juices from the meat, you can just use more of the cold juices from the meat, and reheat the meat, and then stir this in. But, it's going to give this nice dark brown gravy a lighter look. And over the years, I always think, my grandmother's gravy was, I think it was pretty dark brown. And I wonder how she got it that way. She was not one to flour meat before you brown it, but that would do it. And you would end up with a nice, already thickened gravy in the end. Or I may try this year, instead of using flour just to keep the color, I'm into cornstarch. I think I'm going to use cornstarch to thicken the gravy. So that was, and we dunked potato pancakes into the gravy. I said it wasn't about the meat, it was about the gravy. And, by the way, a lot of salt and pepper in this, especially pepper. Even with the hot pepper. My grandmother once told me that in her original recipe, the way her mother made it, there were pickling. She would put in hot pepper and pickling spices, which always, by the way, included bay leaf. So, but she eliminated all of that except for the bay leaf, and I put the hot pepper back in, by the way, because it gave my grandfather heartburn. You know what? Everything gave my grandfather heartburn, which is why when he had his first heart attack, he thought it was heartburn. But it wasn't. Anyway, years pass by. I still never hear of anybody who's made Machana, has heard of Machana, until a Belarus, by the way, Dokshitsky and Minsk. Minsk is the capital of what is now Belarus. And there is now a Belarus restaurant in Sheepshead Bay. Now, if you're a regular listener of mine, I may have told this story before, forgive me. I went to the Belarus, I looked up the Belarus restaurant menu online, and sure enough, there was Machanka, has to be Muchana, right? Machanka was a pork stew served with potato pancakes. So I ran to Sheepshead Bay, tried the Machanka, which was not terrible, but certainly not worth driving to Sheepshead Bay again for. It had a creamy gravy, and it was served with the worst potato pancakes I'd ever been served. But, you know, it had to be the same thing. So as I'm leaving, the owner of the restaurant says, "I hope you enjoyed everything." And I said, "Well, we did eat other things that we did enjoy, by the way, some herring thing or other, I remember." Anyway, we said, "Yeah, except, you know, the potato pancakes were, I'm pretty courageous about criticism." So I said to him, "Except the potato pancakes was so soggy and greasy." And he said, "What do you know about potato pancakes?" I said, "Well, my grandmother used to make a dish called Muchana, and we always had potato pancakes, not just for Hanukkah, but other times as well. And I learned how to make potato pancakes from my grandmother when I was a little boy. And because as a little boy, one of my kitchen chores was to grate potatoes. And as my grandmother would say, when I would complain that I scraped my knuckles doing this, by hand, on a four-sided grater, on the fine side, not on the shredding side. And she would say, "Well, a little blood adds flavor to the latkes." So we didn't worry about that. Now, by the way, she did learn how to do this in a blender eventually. It was a lot of work grating by hand. And then my grandmother was young enough, and the Cuisinart is now old enough, that she actually had the first Cuisinart ever delivered to an appliance store. And she taught herself, well, and me, how to do this in the food processor, which I still do. I still grind up my potatoes in the food processor. And by the way, in my book, Arthur Schwartz's Jewish Home Cooking, there are very specific directions for making potato latkes. So years pass, and I'm sitting at a car wash next to a very friendly woman, young woman, meaning somebody in her 40s probably, maybe not even, and we're speaking in English, and she's speaking in Russian to her mother sitting next to her. Her mother's not that old either. Her mother was probably my age. So I'm saying I'm not that old. I said, "Where are you from?" I knew that they were from somewhere in the former Soviet bloc, but I don't know. Ukrainian, usually in Brooklyn. She said, "Oh, we're from Belarus." I said, "Where?" She said, "Oh, Minsk, of course." Everybody says Minsk because nobody knows Belarus. They know they've heard of Minsk, though. So I said, "Oh, my grandparents were from Belarus. And do you know anything about a dish called Muchana?" And she said, "No, it doesn't." And then I described it to her and told her that you always served with potato pancakes. And so she didn't know it, but she asked her mother, who apparently had just gotten off the plane from Belarus, just in the nick of time, it seems. And her mother said, "Well, I don't know any one dish called Machana, Machanka, but Machanka means to dunk." Huh? Potato pancakes, dunked in gravy. Since then, and this is only a couple of years ago, I can't tell you how much information is now on the internet about Machanka. So, you know, it's too bad I didn't know about this when my grandmother was alive, so I could tease her that it wasn't from the, you know, north side of Minsk, but on the left side of the street or whatever. She used to joke about that. And actually, there's a Slovakian dish called Machanka, too. Now, that I don't know if it's a dunk, but it's a pork soup. And I'm sorry, it's also a sour soup. And Machanka, Belarus style, not kosher in the least, is a pork stew with sour cream stirred in at the end. So that's sort of sour, too. So maybe something to sour. Sour is part of the definition. Haven't gotten to the total bottom of that yet. So I'm gonna, but I'm not gonna make potato pancakes because of this diet I'm on. But I realized just the other day that machanka, the muchana, is totally it's just beef and gravy. Now I just have to figure out what to put the gravy on. I use cabbage a lot for gravy, but I don't think I want to eat any. You know, I'm sort of getting sick of cabbage already. I eat it so much. I don't know. If anybody has any ideas, they can tell me. Should I give a potato latkes recipe since?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, you must fry. Let me say about potato pancakes. I know that people are afraid of frying, but the whole holiday is about frying. So how could you not fry your potato pancakes? But years ago, by the way, there's no reason they have to be potato pancakes. You can make matzo meal pancakes, which, you know, you put together in minutes. But potato pancakes, it was a time when nobody wanted to fry, and listeners were sending me all these, I must say, mostly pretty good recipes for unfried potato pancakes. The other thing nobody wants to do is stand by the pan and fry while everybody's sitting at the table eating. But if you want prime pancakes for everybody, that's the only way to do it. And then you just have to remember to sit down yourself at the end and to take enough to be your fill. But here's my usual formula for potato pancakes. I use a pound of russet potatoes. That's baking potatoes. And the reason I use russet is they are a low-moisture potato. Peel them, wash, you know, and cut them into large chunks. We're going to do this in the food processor. So if you, you know, like two big potatoes could be a pound here. Not that much peeling involved. And then you want 6 to 8 ounce onion. I do indeed weigh. And cut that into chunks. And then the rest of the recipe is 2 large eggs, 1/4 cup of flour, 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder. I don't put baking powder in. How did that get into my recipe? Anyway, so fitted with the metal blade, process about 1/3 of the potato at a time. You don't want to fill up the processor big. And I do it by pulsing. And only at the very end do I want to maybe do a little longer interval. And they should be, the grains of potato should be no bigger than a grain of long grain rice. And then put the potatoes into a large bowl, process the onions, put them into the potato. Now, I truthfully, these days I do the onions first, and then I put the potato into the onions, because the onions do help, the acid in the onions do help the potatoes to stay white. They might turn a little pink by the end, but that's it. So that's it. You do that. You grind it all together, salt and pepper. I pepper heavily, and I salt heavily. Potatoes require a lot of salt. So for a pound of potatoes, you might use as much as 2 teaspoons of salt and 1/2 teaspoon of pepper. And then I usually use canola oil because that's what I have in the house. But if I can find peanut oil, it's the best. Got to say, my grandmother used a hideous product that's not made anymore. It was discontinued just a few years ago. And it was basically solid white shortening flavored like chicken fat.
Crisco?
Naya fat. That's what it was called, Naya fat. And it was made by Rokeach, and they discontinued it because it was like trans fatty acid heaven. So, but anyway, good oil. Use good oil. And make the oil, you know, at least an 1/8 inch, 1/4 inch of oil. You need a good amount of oil. And then I drop the batter off of a large serving spoon, or even a utility spoon. It depends on how large a pancake you want. I don't want mine to be more than like 3 inches long and 2 inches wide. They're always oval because I drop them off the spoon. And now the tricky part is how hot should the oil be? Well, the latkes should bubble immediately, start frying immediately, not just sit there. And if it fries furiously, the heat is too high. And if it, as I say, if it doesn't sizzle immediately, the fat's not hot enough. But let me say, if the pancake breaks up or it's too thin or too lacy, I like to use matzo meal, by the way, instead of flour these days. Anyway, that's sort of about it. It takes a little while to fry at the right temperature. And the first ones will not be great. you drain them on a rack or on absorbent paper. And my job as a kid, besides grating them, was as I got older, I was allowed to fry some, along with my Aunt Selma. She was skilled, according to my grandmother, she was skilled enough. And my my mother, who indeed was skilled enough. And that's it. Potato pancakes.
They're great.
A God's gift.
Yeah, they're great.
Not something I would ever order in a restaurant. In the old days, every once in a while, I would let me try the potato pancakes, but then I would always regret them.
My grandmother would always put a couple of ice cubes in her mix. I don't know why.
Oh, I don't know why. Well, here's a trick. This is not just for potato pancakes, but anytime you're making grated potatoes, a potato pudding, potato kugel, and I still have the spoon, put a slightly tarnished or even heavily tarnished silver spoon in the mix, because the tartrates on the surface of the spoon will keep the potatoes white. By the way, by the same token, a pinch of cream of tartar stirred in will also do the same thing. If you and by the way, you can chunk up your potatoes ahead of time and keep them under water so they don't oxidize, but don't leave them for more than a few hours because they do start absorbing water, and then it's not a good thing.
No, especially when you put them in the fry.
but you can't make the potato pancakes ahead and reheat them in the oven. Oh, you can, and people do.
It's not the same.
But I don't want to eat them.
Yes. It's not the same. It's like if you order an egg roll, reheated egg rolls are just terrible. So
egg rolls are one of my comfort foods. And right now I cannot eat egg rolls, not because of the filling, but because of the fried dough. So I'm considering making the insides just of egg roll.
That's right.
But would it be the same without biting through that delicious fried dough? The answer is no.
No, absolutely.
So far, though I have a very good recipe, the other thing is I could order egg rolls from the Chinese restaurant and just eat the insides, but I know I don't have the willpower to do that. So I'm just avoiding them.
All right.
I'm down 21 pounds.
Well, since the beginning of the pandemic, actually, I went on a diet, the pandemic diet, in April. I'm down 60 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, 60 pounds.
Oh, my. April. So that's all. Did you start at the beginning of April?
It's like 9 months.
Nine months.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm impressed. Let me ask you. I mean, this is your sensible diet, right?
This is where I just eat three meals a day. I keep my caloric count in between 1,500 and 1,900 calories a day. And I eat, like this morning, I had a scrambled egg, which was more than enough to fill me. Then for lunch, I'll have either a big salad, and then for dinner, I make like 3 ounces of a meat, and I'll have a potato and
have
some vegetables.
Well, yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's
extremely controlled.
Yeah, and I don't go out anywhere, so it's easy to do. You don't go. I'm not tempted by any restaurants, so it's been easy to do. And
that's true. Yeah. That temptation is more or less gone.
Yeah.
I don't even know what's going on with restaurants around here. I mean, I can get a couple deliveries, but anyway.
All right.
Okay. I don't even know what I'm eating today. But
well, whatever you do, make latkes.
Well, make muchana. I know I'm going to do that.
Right.
I just have to figure out, well, like I said, what to put the gravy on. I'm finding things to put tomato sauce on, something that I crave a lot of. Eggplant parmigiana is keto friendly. And I made a zucchini sort of parmigiana also. I don't flour the vegetable. I just fry it or bake it.
Yeah.
And the eggplant one I did, I just brushed with olive oil and baked. Not that I'm scared of the oil, it's just that I didn't want it greasy. Okay.
All right,
I'm looking forward to my machana and for losing some weight this week.
All right, and we will speak to you next week.
And we will talk to you next week.
All right, take care, Arthur.
Well, it'll be almost time for Christmas.
That's right. Okay, goodbye.
Ciao.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven this morning here on Robin Hood Radio. Support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. And on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.